Yeah, it's interesting. Every time I put a goal on paper, it was achieved, and I started looking back at those goals, and I think, man, maybe I should have set higher goals, because I didn't think I would be able to achieve the ones I put on there, like 10 houses. And then when I own 10, I'm like, okay, what about 20? What about, okay, 50? And so, the goals have been, something about writing it down and putting it on a spreadsheet and calculate how to get there and just taking step by step. At some point, you've got to ask yourself, when is enough enough, or how much more effort do I want to put into reaching another number, and how much happiness will that bring? So, I hear a lot of your people talk about shifting gears and just focusing on more fulfilling things of charity work and that kind of thing. So that's kind of where we want to go as well, But you also need balance in life, it's no fun to die with a big pile of money, and if you can't enjoy it along the way. So you just try to find that balance between investing and spending.
Welcome, millionaires and future millionaires. You're listening to the Millionaires Unveiled podcast, the show where you'll hear the stories and interviews of everyday millionaires. We'll unveil their decisions, their strategies, and their portfolio allocation. Now to your host, Jace Mattinson.
Welcome back to another episode of the Millionaires Unveiled podcast. This is episode number 355. Stace, how's it going? What's going on in your world?
You know, I have two tiny additions to enter tonight that decided they wanted an opportunity to try to fund the Roth this year. So I'm just hoping we don't have any tiny baby snores in the background for our intro tonight. But they did not want to be put down.
Yeah, the joys of twins. Well, from newborns to retirement, I feel like I've been having a lot of conversations with guests and just friends and other people in general on retirement. And real interesting, came across a real interesting article this last week about living like a king by retiring in Europe, and basically kind of went into how inexpensive / affordable it is to live in parts of Europe, particularly in southern Italy and France. In fact, made the point that basically, what maybe a middle-class retirement in the United States, about $70,000 a year, is living like a king in some of these coastal towns down south in Europe. And they also have very little restrictions on Americans buying property in Italy and France. So you could actually live there, not just rent a place if you wanted to buy.
Yeah, I read that article and it sounded like an interesting retirement plan. It did mention that you have to, you can only live there for 90 days out of a 180-day time period. So be there for 3 months, come home to the States for 3 months. And they also mentioned most of those documents are going to be in the native tongue. So you would have to plan for hiring a professional to help you along with your transition, both boots on the ground in your country of choice and also back at home, so you can make sure you account for all of your additional expenses, even though the overall cost might be less than staying here in the States.
Yeah, so instead of snowbirding between South Florida maybe and the Northwest or the Northeast, you could just hop on over to Europe instead and snowbird there a little bit. At any rate, wanted to read a quick review. This comes from Rikiri. It's a cool name. I think that's the name. This, among so many other episodes, gives great insight to the community, this community you've created. Wishing you and everyone who enjoys listening a toast to your first million. Cheers. Love it. Thank you, Rikiri. Definitely wishing everybody a million, a toast to their first million.
We always love a good million-dollar hauler.
That we do. Speaking of million-dollar hauler, we've got our event, in-person event, kind of keep it low-key. Had several people actually inquire again about that this week. I'm probably going to, I don't want to say that I'm going to eliminate the ability, but I definitely don't want to be running an events company by any stretch of the imagination, so we're going to keep it pretty low key. But yeah, I've got enough interest at this point that I may take a couple more, and that will probably be it, and probably won't advertise it again on the podcast, just because we're not going to have that, have a huge group. We'll have a nice little small tight-knit group and see how it goes, and then we'll go from there. So yeah, I'll be in early part of November in Austin, Texas. So excited for that. And yeah, this week's episode is with Eric. He's got a net worth of $6.5 million. It is all in real estate. He does have a small real estate related company and also an insurance, small insurance company, but he doesn't place much value on those. It do generate some income for him. But yeah, he's got about 55 single family doors, a few commercial properties that span his portfolio. So great conversation with him about building up such a substantial real estate portfolio. And then also getting a little discussion about him making a recent lifestyle move away from the area where he's built up all of his wealth and where his properties are, but decided to move down south for a variety of reasons. So we have a discussion about that, as he also became a recent empty nester, although not so empty as some of the kids moved back in, but they are adults at this point. So kind of a nice life shift conversation with Eric. And although he is still pretty young, he's in his mid to late 40s. And yeah, without any further delay, let's get into the episode with Eric. Eric, do you want to just give us a lot of your background and what you're up to now?
Yeah, hi. My name's Eric Henson. I just moved to Florida from the Midwest, doing some fix and flips at the moment. But yeah, moved down here to get some sunshine and enjoy life a little bit, but still definitely keeping busy. We've got a couple of our kids moved back in with us. So we were empty nesters for a couple of months, but not anymore. But the kids are joining the family business, kind of helping us with the fix and flips. So it's fun.
Awesome. And I want to get into the story. I mean, going from empty nesters to not now, that's kind of a wild adventure. But before we do, what's your net worth today?
About $6.5 million.
Nice. And what is the breakup of the $6.5 million?
It's real simple. It's just all real estate.
Oh, wow. All real estate. Yeah. Is that single family, commercial?
Mostly single family. I do have about three office buildings and a 10-plex. So, but yeah, it's all real estate. I mean, we do have a checking account. There's just enough in there for, handling expenses. I'd like to build that up a little bit more, but yeah, we put everything into real estate.
Wow. And of the $6.5 million, is that all paid off real estate, or any of it paid off at this point?
No. Everything is leveraged. I took advantage of the low interest rates just to kind of be really aggressive and grow as quickly as I could. With the appreciation in real estate, we're sitting at about a 50% loan to value overall.
Wow, that's pretty awesome. And are you still in acquisition mode at this point?
No, not anymore. All of our real estate is back in the Midwest. I've just got a good manager handling all of that. We're going to switch gears and start moving money into syndications just to kind of be more passive investing in real estate.
Interesting. So most of all the real estate you said is in the Midwest. Is that where you used to live?
Yeah, correct. Yep.
Okay, so you bought local for a long time and then decided to relocate. Was the relocation intentional for tax purposes or for lifestyle or what?
Just lifestyle. That's it.
Yeah. Lifestyle? Nice. And would you consider yourself effectively retired at this point?
Well, I mean, I've heard different definitions of retired. I mean, I'm definitely still working, so I'm not retired in that way. Definitely living off of the real estate, but I also have a couple of businesses that I live off of that income. And actually, we're kind of in a transitional phase because one of my businesses is a mortgage brokerage, and between the rates going up and a couple of my top loan officers branching off on their own, I kind of lost most of that income. So that all happened right when we moved to Florida. So we decided to just focus on doing fix and flips to kind of make up the difference in the income. And that's the main focus now. I have had a lot of passive income from the rental properties, but I had, knowing that I was moving to Florida, I was trying out a couple of different property managers, and I tried out three different ones, and they just did a terrible job, and they put in tenants that were awful. And I ended up just training my own employee that helps me with my other business, which is an insurance agency. And now she manages the properties along with her insurance duties, and she's doing a lot better. And so we've been weeding out the bad tenants and getting the good ones back in there so we can get that income, passive income going again.
I guess from buying all these single family properties, did you manage all of these as you scaled while you were doing the mortgage business and the insurance business too? Or when did, kind of walk us back from day one on kind of how this evolved?
Yeah. So I got my, I went to college, I grew up just in a typical family in Oklahoma. That's where I'm from. And, I went to college. I was going to follow in my dad's footsteps and do computer programming. But in college I read Rich Dad, Poor Dad, and that just changed my entire outlook on life. And I decided that I wanted to start my own business and invest, in real estate. And so after I graduated, I bought my first property, which was a duplex, and I lived in one side, rented out the other. And it just started from that. And then I would buy one or two properties per year. And over the last 18 years, I just got more aggressive. Like I would buy one or two a year. And then one year, my wife and I were like, why don't we just set a crazy goal to buy 10? And so we did. And yeah, just built it up. Little by little, and then got into the 10-plex. That was the last residential real estate property we bought, but I also dabbled in the couple of small commercial buildings too that I bought, each one of those for one of my businesses so I could get good loan terms on them. But yeah, it's been quite an adventure. I definitely didn't know exactly what I was doing the whole time. I made a lot of mistakes. I made money, lost money. But one thing about real estate that I like is that, I didn't make a whole lot of money from my job for many years. And the cool thing about real estate is if you buy a fixer-upper, you can finance the whole thing if you find a good local bank and then fix it up and then refinance it, get your money back, and just keep recycling that money, which I know some people call the Burr method. That's really the method I use to just completely grow that equity in these properties without having to make a lot of money from my job. So that's just, I've just been doing that, recycling that money over and over until I'm sitting where I am right now. And now we're just trying to shift gears from accumulation to converting that equity into actual income. And that's just kind of going to be our focus for the next few years, I think.
What year did you buy your first property?
2003. But, I didn't just buy consistently. Like I moved a couple of times to different states. So it's really been the last 18 years, I would say, where I was really consistent with it.
And did you sell any properties along the way as well?
Just maybe two. But I've tried to hold on to. Well, when I moved out of state, I did sell those, but the ones at Kansas City is where they are. Once I moved there, I just haven't really sold any except maybe one.
Wow. And so I guess total doors on the single family side plus the 10-plex, what does that put you at today?
If you look at doors, it's like 136 doors, but that's including, in these office buildings, I rent out to lots of little business owners. But houses, there's about 55 houses.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you have 55 individual houses. That is insane.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, I was managing it myself, but it wasn't too bad. You know, it's not as bad as, I mean, sometimes it gets bad. Like if you have a really bad tenant and you got to go in there and clean it up, but I was able to keep up with it. Yeah.
On average, you're having one turnover a week, basically, then? If they stay in a year, 2 or 3 year lease, or every couple weeks?
Oh, no, not that often. Maybe like one a month to two a month at the most.
That's not bad. Do they stay for a couple years?
Yeah, they usually stay, I mean, at least a year to, you know, I've got some that have been there for many years. So yeah, it's not too crazy. But like I said, when I hired the property manager, they did some really bad, they found some really bad tenants. So whenever they moved out, they were just trashing the places pretty much, which, you know, has cost me a lot of money, but now that situation is almost taken care of. We've just about replaced all of those. So if that's one thing I could advise people, is just be careful with your property manager, you know, keep a close eye on them and, you know, vet the tenants really well with them until you feel comfortable with the property manager.
That's pretty amazing. So you used one property manager for all 55, essentially, when you moved down south?
Now I do. Yeah. Yeah. She's able to take care of it. She works about 30 hours a week, and she also handles my insurance business, which is, you know, pretty small insurance office. But yeah, she's able to do that. And we, you know, I use software and I try to, you know, save time wherever possible. Like when we have a listing, we just put a lockbox on the house so that she doesn't have to be there in person to do showings and, you know, different things like that to kind of cut the amount of time down as much as possible.
Yeah, for sure. So you've made the move from a lifestyle standpoint. You've got all these rentals, but you've mentioned you're wanting to kind of transition to a little bit more passive, I guess, converting some of that equity more into income. Was there something that happened that caused you to make that switch or make that flip? Or is it just kind of the stage of life that you're in now?
It's the stage of life. I mean, now that it really is just lifestyle, you know, we don't want to deal with the hassle of tenants. You know, my property manager, she, you know, I talk to her almost every day, you know, with different issues, you know, different repairs that I have her call me about. If it's over like $200, she's got to get approval. So there's a lot of that, but yeah, we just want to, we found a way to be completely passive with these real estate syndications, and we have enough equity now that we can convert that into those other investments where you won't see as big of a return as you do when you fix up a house and rent it out. You know, you capture a lot of equity all at once when you do that. With the syndications, I'm not expecting quite as big of a return by comparison, but just the hands-off approach to it is really what we like about it. So, you know, that's the reason for that transition, just to have that stress-free life that we're looking for.
Have you made some syndication investments already?
Yeah, we invested in three different ones about a year ago. So we're kind of seeing how those are going. Two have gone really well. The third one had some major issues, but he's got those under control again. So And we invest through a company. It's more of a investment group that they have set up a lot of rules for their lead investors or syndicators so that it kind of protects us better. And I found that paradigm to be pretty good. And so far it's panning out pretty well. So we're probably going to try to put some more in there this year into some different, their apartment complexes. So
yeah,
we'll be doing that a little more.
Has there ever been any consideration of, you know, selling off a bunch of yours and moving it into, you know, apartment complex that you own by yourself? Or is it, hey, I like giving it to these operators because it really is hands off at this point for me?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely looked into doing that right at the height of the apartment boom a couple of years ago. And I couldn't find any good deals because they were just, you know, those things were selling like hotcakes and I didn't find a good deal that made sense. And then, so I got into the syndications and I think I'm just going to stick with that because I don't want to get too involved in operations again. I think we're just more about the lifestyle at this point So, but yeah, as far as selling some properties, we've definitely thought about doing that. I kind of wanted to be cautious about that right now, because if I did anything too extreme and then these syndications didn't work out, I'd be in a bad position. So I'm going to keep the houses, because I know those appreciate pretty well usually. And I think there's going to be some good deals in apartments probably this year because of a lot of distressed sellers maybe coming onto the market later. So I might be able to find some good deals. So maybe then we'll sell some more properties and switch into those.
Nice. So what, from a lifestyle standpoint, I mean, what are you excited about doing that you weren't doing, I guess, previously, or that, you wanted to take that step back, from operations? Because you're still pretty young. I mean, I won't throw your age out here, but you're still in the prime.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, I mean, I would just, I want to keep working, but I don't mind working. It's just the stress part of it. If I can be more of a higher up level and be more managing managers, I'd rather do that than, managing contractors and tenants. I'm happy to continue working. I'd like to maybe work like 10 hours a week. That would be great. Right now with the fix and flips, we're still on pretty full time, but things I'd like to do is just, I don't know. I've got a lot of things I want to do. Just more relaxing would be nice. We don't want to travel too much, but we have done quite a bit of traveling, and my wife said she doesn't want to travel until we can do first class. So she's kind of tired of waiting in lines and being packed in tight with passengers. And so that's a kind of a goal. If we can get to where we can afford to pay for first class, that would be great. And then we'll start doing some more traveling again. But now we're kind of just trying to help out our kids. They're out there. My stepdaughter just graduated from college and she's trying to get on her two feet. So we've created some work for her and her fiance. And like I said, they've moved in with us temporarily. And my son, he's going to be moving back in with us for a few months and working with us. So we're just teaching them, and they've expressed interest in investing in real estate as well. We're trying to pass that on and just try to help the next generation. We'd love to do more charity work. That's a big one. My wife's from Belize, and we've traveled back there numerous times, and there's a lot of poverty down there, and we'd love to just be more involved with helping out with those people. So that's a big thing we want to get into in the next few years.
Did you hit, I mean, I guess the question is asked, did you ever have a number? And I guess at that point, did you hit your number at this point where you feel like, hey, I can take the step off the gas and I do want to relax and I do want to do a bunch of these other things that are important to me. And that's the lifestyle now that I'm creating instead of, working 40, 50, 60 hours a week at this point.
It's interesting. Every time I put a goal on paper, it was achieved. And, I started looking back at those goals and I think, man, maybe I should have set higher goals, because I didn't think I would be able to achieve the ones I put on there, like 10 houses. And then when I own 10, I'm like, okay, what about 20? What about, 50? And so, the goals have been, something about writing it down and putting it on a spreadsheet and calculate how to get there and just taking step by step. As far as, did you say, well, what's the next goal? Is that what you said?
Yeah. Or just if you had a number, the 6.5 that you kind of got to already, and you're like, I'm here.
Yeah. So the number, it's like they talk about the moving goalposts. So, my passive income has surpassed my expenses, numerous times throughout my, throughout this process. And then every time it catches up, my passive income catches up to the expenses. We've been setting new goals. And the first goal was to just have $1 million net worth. And then the next goal was 2 million. And then like right now, I think the goal is 10 million net worth. And, but now I'm actually more focused on an income number, because, you can invest in different real estate deals that are more of a net worth play where the equity, where you get a big increase in equity, but maybe not so much cash on cash return, versus investing in real estate that's more cash flow focused. So, you know, I've like to pull back on the growth and focus more on the cash flow. So like a goal right now, the next goal is try to get up to like a $500,000 a year cash flow. And we'll just see how that feels. If it feels good, we'll just kind of, you know, kick back. And I think we'll always just be involved and working in something. But I think that's the next goal. I think eventually I'd love to hit that $1 million a year mark. But we'll just have to see, you know, because maybe at some point you've got to ask yourself, you know, when is enough enough, you know, or how much more effort do I want to put into reaching another number, and how much happiness will that bring? So, you know, I hear a lot of your people talk about shifting gears and just focusing on more fulfilling things of, you know, charity work and that kind of thing. So that's kind of where we want to go as well. You know,
did you go to college?
Yeah, I did. I've got a master's in business administration, but looking back, I definitely didn't need to. Like I haven't really had a corporate job since college. So that was when I was still in the mindset that, you know, get a good education and get a good job. But now I just think that if you can go the entrepreneurial route, I think that's a good way to go. When I was in college, I went to visit. It was part of an assignment. We had to visit a business owner. So me and a friend, we visited an accountant. He had his own accounting office. And we asked him what was his biggest, if he could change one thing, what would it be? And he said, I wish I would have branched out on my own earlier. And for some reason, that always stuck with me. So I just decided just to start my own business, you know, as quickly as possible and never look back. You know, occasionally I'd have to get a part-time job when I first started, you know, when the income was not consistent. But I haven't worked for a corporate job in probably at least, like 20 years, I guess. So yeah, the college thing, you know, I don't think I needed the degree necessarily. I haven't really used it.
And did your wife work outside the house?
She helps with the fix and flip. She's got that. She does the design part of things, like choosing colors and materials and finishes and all that kind of thing. But I just wanted her to just focus on what was more fulfilling for her, which was just helping out with raising the children and taking, you know, being a homemaker and all the things that involves. Now that she's an empty nester, yeah, she's just helping with the fix and flips and being a designer for that. So
anything that you would give advice on being, you know, transitioning to that empty nester, especially as young as you've done it?
Well, you know, we're still getting used to it. Advice, I mean, yeah, personally, I was a little bit sad at first, you know, because I really love having the kids around, and I'm actually really glad that they're back for a time. It's just temporary, but it does pass, like that feeling of sadness. Like it does, you get over it and you find things, other things to do. And just focus on being happy if they're doing well, which they are, and they're living their own lives. But I don't know, just if my advice is, if you're sad to lose them, that will pass. And, you know, we haven't got any grandkids or anything yet, so I'm sure that's going to change things quite a bit when that happens. But, you know, we're still in that transition phase. So I haven't really fully experienced the emptiness yet. So it's just fine.
Awesome. Well, let's wrap up with some, rapid fire questions here. What's the, most expensive pair of, shoes that you've purchased?
Like $130.
Okay. What about the most expensive meal out?
I paid for when my stepdaughter got engaged, we had a big engagement dinner. It was like $500. So that would be the most.
$500 engagement dinner. That's not bad, man.
Yeah, it's not. It's not. It's not too bad.
Okay. What about the most expensive experience or trip that you've been on?
Well, we enjoyed taking the whole family, you know, the kids. We've got three. And we went on a European vacation, just rented a van and drove around Europe. And then another one was we went to Greece for a couple of weeks. I'd say they were probably about 8 to 10,000 each on those, but we felt it was really well worth it. I mean, we still look at the photos and talk about the experience. It was definitely worth it.
Going back to your comment on your wife wanting to fly first class, what does that look like from a financial standpoint before you think you can?
I don't know. I haven't even really priced the first class ticket to like Europe, or I wouldn't even know what that costs. So that I have to do some research on that. I have no idea.
In your mind, you're not at first. You can't fly first class yet.
I don't. I mean, we joke about it because we kind of want to travel, me and the kids. And we said, well, why don't we put you up in first class and we'll sit back with the steerage. She said she'd feel too guilty if we did that. So, but yeah,
that's awesome.
I don't know, to look more into that.
Okay. What was your first job?
My first job. It was, I got a job with a carpet cleaner. Like when I was 15, and it lasted one day because I wasn't strong enough to handle that steam carpet machine. Yeah, that was my first job.
That's awesome. Do you remember what you made for the first day, for one day?
Oh man. So this is back in the early 90s. So probably like $5 an hour. I don't know. It was pretty bad.
Okay.
Yeah.
What's the craziest thing that you've ever done to earn money?
To earn money? Well, I've done some pretty crazy things just managing rental properties back when I did a lot of the work myself. I mean, we had a basement that got backed up with the sewage. We're talking like 3 inches of sewage. And I remember bringing the hose down there and cleaning that out when it was unclogged. And that was disgusting. I've had to take a toilet that was completely backed up and remove it to try to get it unclogged. That, I mean, did disgusting stuff. So that would probably be the worst thing I've ever done for money. Like, yeah, I don't know, or what I think is craziest.
Okay, what's the most fun that you've had with money?
I think the travel for sure. Yeah, I just going on those vacations with the kids. That's been the funnest thing for sure. Yeah.
We just got to get you in that first class seat now and you'll have a little more fun too.
I guess so. Yeah. I mean, I've been pretty frugal for the most part, you know, through my life. So I'm looking forward to doing a little bit more. I mean, I did buy my wife a Porsche and I finally bought myself a nice truck a few years ago, but yeah, the travel and then, yeah, I'll have to let you know when we fly first class for the first time. That'll be something.
Is the Porsche the most expensive car that you've purchased?
Yeah. Yeah, it was. That was it. And then we bought the other most expensive thing was a boat, I guess, because we like to go out on the lake and do wakeboarding, wake surfing. So that was almost the same as the Porsche as far as cost.
Nice. What kind of boat?
It's called a Heyday. It's like a 20-foot surf boat.
I think I've heard of those. Yeah, I haven't been on one yet, but yeah, I've been on almost all the ones out there that are made. one of the ones I've not been on yet, though.
It's not as expensive as Bugatti. Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah.
That one I haven't been on. I know that one's super expensive. I've seen a few of them, but I've never surfed behind one or been on one myself.
Yeah.
Where did your interest come from in personal finance and being frugal?
Definitely from my dad. My dad, he was really frugal. I got it from him, and he would show me his spreadsheets and like for the budget, and I just thought that was really cool. He would sit me down and show me like, here's what we're making, here's all the expenses, line items, and he was definitely the frugal one. My mom was more the free spirit when it came to spending. So, but yeah, definitely came from my dad on that.
Okay, what financial habit do you think has changed the most since you became a millionaire?
Financial habit. I'd say just reinvesting, you know, like when you know how much you can turn a dollar into by investing it, it makes it that much harder to spend it on something frivolous, because you're not looking at just that, the cost of that item, you know, like $100 pair of shoes. When you look at how much you could turn that $100 into in a 2-year, 3-year period, you look at that pair of shoes and it costs more than that $100. It costs, you know, $200 or $300 when you realize you could have put that money somewhere in an investment and multiplied it. So it makes everything look just way, way more expensive. So I think that's the way I see the financial world. So yeah, it's taken a lot to try to just spend money on things like the cars and the boats and that kind of thing, because knowing that those are lost opportunities to invest the money. But you also need balance in life. You know, it's no fun to die with a big pile of money and if you can't enjoy it along the way. So you just try to find that balance between investing and spending.
Yeah. Is there anything that you've particularly increased your spending on as you've grown your wealth?
Yeah. I mean, just the things I told you about, you know, splurging on the vehicles, the house every like 5 years, we would upgrade the house. When we moved to Florida, we had to downgrade because it's so much more expensive out here. You know, we went from a 5,000 square foot house to about half that size, and the payments about double because, you know, it's just so expensive out here. But I guess we're paying for the weather and the proximity to the ocean, that kind of thing. But yeah, I think that's
okay. What do you think the dumbest thing that you've ever wasted money on is?
The dumbest thing. Oh man, the dumbest thing. I mean, I have done some dumb things with money. I just, I can tell you a big mistake I made with money, but it was, I thought I was doing something smart. I had a contractor that would do my fix and flips. You know, I'd buy the house. He would go in and fix them up. He brought that 10-plex to me, and he had figured out how much it was going to cost to fix it up. So I went in on that, and I was paying him, and I wasn't really managing the job because I trusted him so much. And it turns out he was pocketing most of that money and not really doing the work. So I lost literally hundreds of thousands of dollars on that. So that's probably the dumbest thing I've ever done with money, was just, trusting that contractor when I should have been a little more careful and cautious on that.
Wow.
So, and that's a good lesson too, because, you know, I thought he was trustworthy because we'd done a lot of deals together, but you know, you can't let your guard down. He was, I don't know. You just have to kind of have safeguards in place at all times. I lost a lot of money on that deal, but you know, I own that property, and I was able to finish rehabbing it. And because of the market, you know, it's hard to make a really bad mistake with real estate, I think, because, you know, there's so many different ways real estate returns money to you, whether the tax savings or the appreciation, all of that. So it's kind of hard to completely mess up. So I ended up doing okay on the deal, but I could have done a lot better if I hadn't, you know, let him have free reign over that money. So anyway, long answer.
Nice. What's a closely held belief that you once had that you recently changed your mind on?
I was just talking to my wife about that. I used to think I had more control over things in my life, you know, whether it just kind of my sphere of influence. But it's kind of a general answer, but I just feel like I've learned recently there's a lot less that I have control over than I thought I did. You know, people make their own decisions and do their own thing, and you feel like you have more influence in what you do. So I kind of learned that I'm not as significant in this world as I thought I was. Like I'm just one little piece of the puzzle. So that's something I guess I've kind of learned recently.
Nice. Any final words of advice for somebody who's just starting out?
I do believe personally, I've read that real estate is is the vehicle that the majority of millionaires use to build wealth. I definitely believe that. It's not the only way, obviously, but if someone's looking for a really tried and true way, I would totally recommend real estate as a vehicle to doing that. It's not easy, but I mean, it is hard work, but I think that it's definitely a way to get there. Especially another thing that people think is they don't need money, or they need money to make money, but in real estate, you don't. You can pair up people who have money with people who are willing to do the operations side of it. And so whether you pair up with somebody or borrow from the bank or borrow from your credit cards for the down payment, or there's just a lot of creative ways to get into real estate without needing to have money. It might surprise a lot of people how you can get into real estate and grow your wealth pretty consistently. So I know that would be my advice on that. So, and I'm happy to help anyone who's interested if they have questions about it, whatnot.
Awesome. That's Eric with a net worth of $6.5 million. Thanks for coming on the show today.
Yeah, appreciate it. Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks for listening to the Millionaires Unveiled podcast with Jace Mattinson. For more stories, investment opportunities, and information, check out our website, millionairesunveiled.com. See you next time when you'll hear from another everyday millionaire.